There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile live from Montgomery on this Tuesday. Glad to have you along. I'd say live local talk from a distant location. That's what we're doing today as it is return to session here. We're playing the back nine in legislative session in Alabama as we work through some pretty big issues. And one of the big ones, of course, at least has everybody talking, and we can gauge how big of an issue is it for the state or not. And that's the issue of lottery. So we will talk to many from our local delegation up here in Montgomery about lotto and a whole lot more. And I brought in the big guns, our buddy Jeff Poor from the Jeff Poor Radio Show, Lanyap, Breitbart, Yellowhammer News. And Where are we set up?
We are in House Majority Leader Nathaniel Ledbetter's office in the State House.
All right. So this is the last time we were broadcasting. We were in the state capitol.
Right.
And we were over in Secretary of State John Merrill's office. And now we're across the street in the big building with limited internet.
Well, the internet...
You have to go certain places, you know. Right. I heard this, and we're going to have members, you know, coming in from the House and Senate today. I was told, and we can research this again, that they are not even allowed to have the Wi-Fi password.
Is that true?
This is our deep investigation. I'm doing a midday mobile.
I am on their Wi-Fi right now.
Did they give you the code?
No.
You have to hand the phone to them for them to put the code in?
I'm pretty sure they just... It's open.
Well, I think there's another one.
Okay. That they won't give
okay.
you.
Okay, that's the one, and those members of the legislature have to hand their phones. I've been told they have to hand their phones to somebody in security here. The security person puts in the code and then hands their phone back.
That's probably true. There's a House, there's a member, there's a Senate, and there's a staff, and then there's the public. But the public works just fine.
Yeah, now that you said that, it's gonna fall apart. Hey, we got a lot to do over the next 2 hours, and I appreciate you being along. And coming up, I know that we'll talk to Representative Chip Brown, also State Senator Chris Elliott, Representative Steve McMillan. And we talked this morning during Midday Mobile about former Governor Don Siegelman joining us on the show, but I just got off the phone with Siegelman, and it looks like on Thursday we're going to try to move that interview to Thursday to talk about it. I think it is an interesting take. You had him on the other day and discussing... Here we sit with the two lotto bills. Now, one of them has way more traction than the other, but two lotto bills that are both Republican lotto bills. There was Democrat Governor Don Siegelman back then, who was a proponent of the lottery, who couldn't get it done. Governor Ivey now has said she wants people to have the right to a referendum, but she's not coming down either way, whether we should have a lottery or not.
Well, she has little to do with it, right, at this stage.
Right, so, but has that ever stopped a governor? Has that ever stopped a governor from
saying... It's always been Democrat governors that have ran on the lottery.
Yeah.
You take away the lottery, what's the next Democrat governor going to run on?
Right. So the Republicans could be doing... You could say, oh, well, it's strategic to take this away as a plank of platform for Democrats going forward. At the same time, some of the polling out there, even our unscientific poll on our website, shows overwhelming support for the lottery. I think the worry to me is... That's just the lottery. That's like unnamed candidate running against named candidate. That's the lottery. It doesn't say where the money goes. It's not specific to how it's how the whole thing. I mean, the devil's in the details, to be cliched here.
I think the fight has nothing to do with the morality. Right. It has little to do with where the money goes.
No.
The big fight, to me, is Dog Tracks versus Porch Creek Indians.
Explain that to folks. I've talked about it a few times, but you'd probably do a better job of why one benefits more by one bill, one benefits more by the other bill.
Well, the McClendon bill, the early bill that's dead on arrival, or that was dead on arrival.
McLottery, yes.
Right. He wanted to tie the Dog Tracks, what they have now, their electronic bingo, to it, but he wanted to take another step and call it a virtual lottery terminal.
Yes.
Porch Creek said, no way, we don't want that. So that was the fight. And what had happened was the bill that was why it was dead on arrival in the first place. So then they come up with this other proposal. It was spearheaded by Senator Greg Allbritton and, mm-hmm. and Senate Pro Tem Del Marsh, but really Allbritton's bill takes all that away. And you just have a little simple
water. The clean, one we're calling the clean.
But.
Is it clean?
But the deal with that was the Porch Creek Indians, if you expand gaming, if you expand gambling in Alabama, would they be able to go into Class 3 gaming?
Right.
And that is...
I have not gotten that. We've talked about that several times. I've not gotten a solid answer on that, so...
But no one really knows. It's really up to the federal government. See, the Department of Interior, if Alabama has a lottery... Then does that bolster their case to have more Class 3 gaming at their three casinos, Wetumpka and Atmore and the one in Montgomery? Does that, could they petition the federal government to expand their gaming? That's a whole different question, but they think, a lot of people think that is why they are for this proposal. They just want the lottery and they want a green light gambling in the state. Now so then. They would tell you, we had Robbie McGee on from the Porch Creek Indians on, and he says, well, there's already pari-mutuel gaming in the state. There's already, you're betting on Greyhound or horse racing or whatever when they have it. So we think that there's already that argument to be made. So this has nothing to do with that.
Okay, and that's kind of goes back to what I was saying yesterday. Can something happen? Can they not be, they just don't oppose it? Meaning, and I took some umbrage with J.D.'s cartoon the other day, J.D. Crow, and I like J.D., but I was looking through it, and I said, I think it's unfair. I think what he had shown in his cartoon was unfair, that this was specifically designed to divert money, not let the money go to schools, through this at the same time to be a specific benefit to the Porch Creeks. Could this bill possibly be beneficial to the Porch Creeks without it being designed that way? Because if the argument is it's a clean lotto bill, and I will argue, though, that we may be re-legislating this one day people will try to play lottery if this passes, want to play lottery on their phone, whether it's a virtual scratch-off or whatever it is, or put your numbers in. Like I said, y'all, I'm the worst person knowing about gambling, but some virtual version of that. But let's say that this paper ballot is just specifically because we want to keep it simple.
Right.
That then benefits... it benefits the Porch Creek for this reason, although, like Robbie says, maybe it does. You know, maybe they could already do the thing now. Can something exist without, even though it does benefit them, it was not designed to benefit them? Or am I being Pollyanna and saying...
That's why the dog track interests want to hitch their wagon to this. They mm-hmm. want to get what they have green-lighted and legalized.
Green track lighted, yes.
Yes, green track and Victory Land. Yes. So the green track is the track of Green County near Utah and Victory Land near Tuskegee, right?
Mm-hmm.
And right now what they're doing is kind of, a lot of people think it's illegal. It probably is illegal.
What happened in Jefferson County today was illegal enough that had a seizure.
Well, they have constitutional amendments to allow them to have bingo.
Charity bingo halls, Jeff.
They're allowed to have bingo. Yes. But what they're playing is slot machines, but they call it electronic bingo, right? Mm-hmm. Well, if the legislature doesn't okay them for having that, Marshall, the Attorney General's office, is going and break all this up.
Right.
So right, they're trying to do is get this cleared up legally, right? And I think that's why they want to hitch their wagon to this lottery bill. Well, the Senate was having none of that. They weren't going to have any of that at all, and so the House, well, not the House, but the Senate proposal without that, it's being framed in a way now that it's pro-Porch Creek because you're not giving a carve-out for the dog tracks.
I tell you what, we're going to come back from the break. We're going to talk about this some more and talk about everything else going on right now as we're, I guess, playing the back nine in legislative session here, made the turn in Montgomery. Representative Steve McMillan is going to join us next right here on Midday Mobile, live from Montgomery on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right. right. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile on this Tuesday. Glad to have you along. Live local talk over the next couple of hours. And text line's open. We'll be checking that from up here in Montgomery. Text line 343-0106. 343-0106. Big thanks to Dalton running the command central back there in Mobile. And, yeah, here for Tuesday. Legislature is back in session. Actually, they will be. Let me check with Representative Steve McMillan, District 95. When do you think y'all, what time?
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock. It's official, right?
That's it.
Okay, so 1 o'clock back in. What do you, you got to know what you're going to be looking at
on
when you get started.
Thing on the first calendar, and if people are not familiar with that terminology, that's the Rules Committee's product that sets the agenda for what we're going to discuss.
Okay.
And we've got two special orders. We got one, the first one would be nothing but the abortion issue.
Okay.
And then the other one, if we finish the first one, will be to other bills, Senate and House bills.
The abortion bill that we've talked about quite a few times, y'all, I think there's no denying this is a vehicle to challenge Roe versus Wade, right? And this is coming, now.
And apparently in conjunction with other states. It's not right. Just us running out there by ourselves this time.
So what's it looking like when you talk to fellow
I
House
think
members?
Maybe as many as six or eight states. Don't quote me on that because I'm not certain, but I know there's several that are doing the same thing we're doing and going to go in together and with the appeals and so forth.
You think how's the vote going to break down?
Just don't have any idea right now. Probably be pretty close in the House. I'd say probably 2/3, 1/3.
Okay. Also, at some point, it's now from the Senate into y'all's hands in the House, and it's time to talk lotto on your side.
Yep. That's going to be interesting too.
Well, and I want to talk about some things that are going on, and then we'll get into lotto discussion more. But I do want to give you a chance to let people know about this so they can get the information, share that information. You sent an email to me the other day. The archives here having Descendants Day for those relatives who were delegates and signers of the, as Jeff and I were just talking about the Constitution, but the Constitution of 1819, Constitutional Convention.
That's correct.
Explain this and how this applies to folks here in Alabama.
Well, it's interesting. My first exposure to it was when we went up to Huntsville for the official kickoff of the bicentennial celebrations, which is going to be a two-year-long event, or series of events, I guess. And today, from 2 to 6, or 2 to 5 maybe, there's going to be a Descendants Day over at the archives. And I've been told there are probably a couple of hundred people coming, but we're allowed to bring one guest. So if you got 100 signers and they each brought a...
It'd be a big event.
Yeah.
So these were the... And this was interesting. From the 22 counties. You wrote this, you said, because you're one of these descendants, your family did, and so one of the 22 counties. I looked at the email, I said, huh, Steve, there are 67 counties. But back then,
there were only 22. And I now learned that in Huntsville, too, because if I'd ever read it, I'd forgotten it.
Did the 22 counties at that point take up the
same
space of Alabama?
Basically the same territory, yeah.
So they've just been divided and subdivided since.
The largest one, as I recall, geographically, was the Wiregrass one. And it was large. It was probably a fifth or sixth of the whole state, just in that one county at that time.
Wow, even bigger than like a congressional district is today.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's going on. 22 counties, and you said back in 1819, so there were 100 delegates.
No.
I mean, 22 delegates, 100
no,
people.
There were more than 22 because the delegates were selected based on population of the county where they resided.
Okay. So what was, because your kin came from Monroe County. How big was Monroe County, a bustling county at that point?
It took in Baldwin and Monroe and maybe some of Clark. I don't remember all the details.
But back then, probably 1819,
it was
a lot
of
people
of the more populated.
Yeah, I was thinking about the area around the river.
And,
yeah. Okay, so this is going on today, starting at
2 o'clock.
Okay, and will you take some pictures for me and post some pictures up
here?
Sure. All right. This is going on, and we'll put a note up on our page about this as well. Let's talk a little more lotto here. And if you're just joining us, Jeff Poore from WVNN, and of course Breitbart, Yellowhammer News, and Lanyap in with us, Representative Steve McMillan, District 95. And we're live in Montgomery, and we're actually in Majority Leader Nathaniel Ledbetter's office. So thank you to him for the great internet connection. Last time I leaned on Secretary of State.
Much more convenient for us.
Yeah, this
too,
is so. Right here in the building. Yeah, you go up or down to where y'all are? Where are we? Are we below?
We're on four. We're on five.
Okay, so we're just underneath
right
the house.
You're right under the house.
That's
right.
What all that stomping's going on up there. That's y'all in the house. So the abortion number one, but you said some other items up there other than Lotto. What do you think the short list here?
I don't remember the special order calendar because it was adopted last Thursday and I haven't looked at it since.
Right.
It'd be difficult for me to tell you in detail very many things.
Have you heard support? I mean, because we were just talking about the Lotto bill and bills, I should say plural, but looks like Senator Albritton's bill is one that has traction. Questions about this? It was, detractors are saying this doesn't have any money for schools in it. This is a benefit to the Porch Creeks. What about the first part about the schools? You know, I said, and I've been proven wrong on this, I said going into it, it would have some school component because elsewhere they've used schools to sell lotteries.
Yeah. And in many of those places, they took the money that was generated for education from the lottery
swap it out. I agree. I've been talking about it for years, and it's disingenuous, but it's the deal, right? In most states, they said, we've got to do it for the kids.
Well, it's an interesting thing. I had an opportunity to talk to the good senator yesterday, and he's got some interesting observations about how the money is distributed. One of them is that the Alabama Trust Fund needs to be paid back, number one. Number
right.
two, it will be there for future funding. And it's kind of like a piggy bank, I guess you'd say, but I don't want to see it abused too much and see too much taken out of it.
Yeah, we pulled that little stopper out of the bottom and took, 100 and how many million? What was it?
138 million.
138 million out of the bottom of it and then put that little stopper back in it. So that's one of my concerns that Jeff and I were talking about, too, that like it makes complete sense to me to pay back what's missing, what's been taken. Beyond that, explain why it's a better idea to keep putting, 50% or money into it.
What we did was probably one of the top three smart things the legislature's done since I've been here. And that was taking the money that was left from the trust fund, not the education trust fund, but
oil
the
and gas.
There were two funds originally. They were combined into the Alabama.
But
trust.
This is the one I call the oil and gas trust.
That's
this
right.
is takes the revenues
that's
from.
Right.
Okay.
That's the Alabama.
Yes.
All right. The beauty of that is that 10% of the growth in revenue goes back into that fund annually.
And into it goes back into
the Alabama Trust Fund.
Okay.
So. You're growing. It's mm-hmm. got a built-in growth,
right.
which is great.
Right.
It also shares some of that revenue with municipalities and counties.
Okay. And
not a lot, but...
But some.
Some.
The other 50% going to general fund.
Mm-hmm. I don't have a problem with that. The growth taxes, revenue sources, go to the Education Trust Fund.
Can you explain that to folks? I've said that several times, but I want to have you reiterate that.
You have things like income tax, sales tax, and other type revenue sources that are what we call growth funds. They're tied to the economy, which is good and bad. It's good right now because I think three out of the last 4 years we've had record-breaking.
Look at this economy. Look at the numbers that just came out. Look
yeah.
at, yeah, in Alabama right there.
So that's why I think going to the general fund is really wiser long term.
So with the general fund, 93% or so earmarked, right?
Mm-hmm.
That means y'all basically, 7% is what y'all are deliberating
that's
over.
That's about right.
7% of the 100%. Yep. I think people forget that.
Yeah.
That what y'all are going through here is working the spending of 7% of the budget that's up for decision year to year.
Correct.
Having new revenue come in there from a lottery, if this does pass, we go through. Is that going to be then itself earmarked at 93%? Will the process end up locking it down just the way it has the other 93%, you know, or is it going to have flexibility? Whatever that say is $25, I don't know what it is that comes in there. Will it year to year be free of last year's decision for it? Will y'all be able to apportion that money
to some extent
to need?
We can't bind a subsequent legislature from doing something that
but earmarking
put in place without a constitutional amendment.
Okay. And with that, and I keep going back to this too, this lottery process, no matter what happens or done, it's a two-part. You have to have a constitutional amendment. That's what we'll look at. If this passes, either version or whatever they pass, we're going to be looking first at the constitutional amendment in 2020 that we're circling yay or nay on, which then brings that question, does that change in your understanding that if it changes the Constitution of the state of Alabama, does that then change what kind of gambling is allowed on tribal lands?
I'm glad you brought that up.
And Jeff,
I heard the discussion that you had, and I think it shows the listeners what a complex issue this is. It's not just as simple as, oh, let's let the voters go vote.
Right.
Because as y'all have shown, and I'm not being negative or derogatory, there's a lot about it you don't know, and you
guaranteed
know more than the average person. So it's really, you know, people better just look real close and be sure they understand what they're voting in place.
Well, that's the point. So much of the focus now has been clean lottery, this other version of lottery. But I would like to go look, is there something in the amendment to the Constitution that tells me with just in every man's mind, hey, this means more than lottery? Because I've always argued the lottery seems to be I've always said it's the wine spritzer of the gambling world, right? It's the lightest of the gambling. It's, it's a little bit of wine with some seltzer in it kind of thing. But if it then, by default, becomes Class 3 gaming, it's worth some study.
Absolutely. And even beyond that, you've got a potential ruling from the Department of Interior on whether or not they think the proposal is fair.
See, y'all, it can't ever be easy. Head to the news break. We'll come right back. More Midday Mobile. We are live in Montgomery right here on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile on this Tuesday. Glad you are here, and we are here in Montgomery. We're talking with members of the legislature and the delegation from back home, Representative Steve McMillan, District 95, sitting in with Jeff Poore and I. Jeff, of course, with WVNN and Lanyap and Breitbart and Yellowhammer News, talking some lotto and talking about the fact that it is complex. But, you know, you've been around this long enough, Representative McMillan, complex is tough to talk about in the political realm. It's got to be either black and white, yes or no, A or B.
When you push that green button or push that red button, you got to know what you're doing.
But this is a subject that is because it's not just yes lotto, no lotto. It's lotto, but what kind of lotto, Jeff, right?
I mean, there's a lot of grays. So,
you could be a yes lotto vote, but within that yes lotto vote, then it's split. Well, what does that mean?
But I think there's these dog track owners are trying to conflate it all into one issue, make it one big thing. Let's just vote on gambling, and that's a little step too far for a lot of people.
What do you think?
I agree. No doubt about it.
Why don't we go all in? Why is it that we, you know, what we're discussing here is gambling. It's gambling. It's a game of chance. Lotto, you pick numbers and see. We'll discuss lotto, but, you know, I would argue, then why don't we just say, hey, state of Alabama, are we going to gamble at all in the state? And if we do, let's do everything, or we're going to go zero and we're going to shut everything down. It's a question, this kind of nuanced way to get into it. And I'll argue, listen, it wouldn't make us by ourselves. We're one of, I think, 5 states left that don't have a lottery.
That's right.
Yeah. A lot of states that don't have other gambling, they have lotteries.
Yeah.
So, within it, I mean, I think most people, unless they get in and read and listen to us, and will just say, oh, the vote will come up in 2020, it'll be yes or no for lottery. Everything else beyond that in the detail is lost. It's just, I want a lottery or I don't want a lottery.
I've done a little research on the history of it.
Okay.
It's really kind of interesting. The first lottery was Harvard being allowed to have a lottery by the state in order to build dorms.
So it's Harvard's fault. I knew it all. I'm putting that note down. It's Harvard's
but then
fault.
Immediately, Columbia, Yale, and Princeton followed suit, and it went on from there. And then at one point, I don't remember, in the late 1890s, it was outlawed in every state in the nation. It was illegal to take a lottery ticket across state line.
Well, well, that would shut down Alabama, wouldn't it? But it's funny. It's like these things that come back around. This idea that these lotteries are a new thing when they were actually quite the opposite. There were lots of lotteries, plural lotteries, and then it came back where they said, well, private lotteries and educational lotteries maybe can't do that, but states can get in the business lottery. Has anybody talked to you what it would look like? Let's say either bill goes through, whatever. But I think the Albritton bill has the traction, if any. What does the Alabama lottery look like? Is it, and such simplistic questions in my mind are like, how many employees would make up the lottery? Would they have a building or they have an office? How do you apportion? Where do we buy the machines from? Are those things discussed at all?
No, not in any detail. Not in the kind of detail that people really need to make an informed decision. There'll be an increase in employment. I hate to give a number, but it seemed like I've heard the number of 7,200.
7,200.
Mm-hmm. Statewide.
That's a big number.
That would be part of the lottery commission or whatever we would call it.
There would be employees of the lottery. The ticket sales, convenience stores, I assume.
Okay. On those sales would take place at private businesses. Although I would argue, why don't we have them at the ABC stores? As I pick fights out there, why don't we? But if we had but how many people did, if they said, would be state employees running the lottery?
I have no idea about all of that. Not gotten into those details yet.
And see, I think that's one of the things, like you said, people need to research this before we would. This is something that would not come up for vote till next year, but still. There's a lot of questions when y'all are tasked with this in the legislature making a decision.
We'll have votes before next year. We got to inform ourselves, and no doubt about it, and I'll certainly do that.
And what are you hearing from constituents when it comes to lottery? Are you hearing much?
A lot of people want a lot. They'll just say, want to vote on the lottery. Why won't you let us vote on the lottery? That's the only thing they're thinking about is getting to vote.
Well, and that's, you know, that was last time that happened, 1999? And it was, Jeff may have the numbers, but was it like 60-40 against? It was against, was it 60-40?
It wasn't quite that big of a spread. It was probably closer
was
to
in the high 50s, maybe.
Yeah, 10 points or so. And we had Siegelman on my show yesterday, and he told me he did not see that coming. He did not see a number coming at him, and he didn't see the forces that were opposing the lottery at the time. He was not ready for that. He thought everybody just kind of was in agreement because he got elected governor, and that's all he ran on in 98. If you remember, it was Fob James that had an ugly, ugly primary with Whitten Blunt, and that really weakened him going into that general election. And then Siegelman was lottery, 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 and then he won, and people thought, well, we're going to get a lottery now. And then they called a special election. And what Siegelman will tell you, I hate to give away too much of your interview with him, but what he will tell you is, I should never have called that for that special election. I should have put it on a general election ballot. It might have passed. But what it did, it allowed these forces, and everybody knows a story about the gaming interest in Mississippi.
Along with religious interest working.
Yeah, they bolstered the churches. Yep.
Look at the Abramoff book where he talks about
it. What Siegelman will say is, they told the black preachers to just tell your parishioners to stay at home, and they told the white preachers to tell your parishioners to go out and vote against it.
So at that point it was in a special, but he believes that if it was part of, like, this will be part of a
general election, right? Or this primary
is
right.
Yeah, I mean, this will be on the primary. This will be if
that's
passed,
right.
If passed,
that's right.
The CA will be on with a bunch of other stuff.
What the
President Trump will be on there,
the U.S. Senate election,
and there'll probably be some local constitutional amendments too,
which is a whole other discussion. Do y'all ever, I mean, I know that y'all are dealing with the Constitution you're given here, but is there something we can do? I mean, I know it's been tried before I don't have any business telling folks in Walker County what they shouldn't do, and they shouldn't tell somebody down.
That part's been addressed.
It has to some degree, but there's still some statewide, there's a few things that still come up for some reason. You know, it's not, but it's like the addressing these counties.
The real statewide issues that are on the ballot now, whereas it used to be, you know, people all over the state could potentially vote on something affecting only Baldwin County. Now there's a constitutional committee that reviews them, and there's several criteria. One is it has to be purely local and purely affect only one geographical area, like a city or a county, or maybe a city within a county or whatever. It also, that group has to determine, I can't remember all of it, about four or five things, so that they have to be sure that they comply with in order to be put on a local ballot or a state ballot.
And Representative McMillan, I look at the situation too, bringing that up. Mobile's dealing with this, right? So Mobile, City of Mobile, municipality, wanted to have some extra teeth here to deal with the stolen guns being used in crimes. Got a petition up here for that. And it's an education in Alabama civics, people learning why a municipality has to come to Montgomery to change something.
Yeah.
But that's our system.
Home rule. People, it's up to Baldwin County, for example, has some of the most advanced home rule of any county in the state, if not the most.
And that was, but that's been earned. That doesn't just happen. Everybody doesn't have the same
that's
system.
Correct. But there are a couple of statewide constitution amendments that give home rule, but they're basic services like wastewater and garbage collection and that sort of thing.
What else are you seeing? Let's talk about 95, because let's talk about one of the economic engines for the state. 95 being
the
one of
the economic engine
for the state. I mean, you talk about revenue coming at 6% up here to Montgomery. It's a whole bunch of that coming through 95.
Yeah.
What do you? I mean, when you talk to fellow members of the legislature, and they're talking about moving money here, there, and the other, and you're trying to fight for money for 95, you got to point out kind of where it comes from.
It's interesting because a lot of that is it's kind of like we bring a lot of our problems on ourselves when we say that we're not getting our fair share. We're probably not getting a total fair share, but I did some research on a state employee, Department of Transportation employee, and he oversaw over $2 billion worth of infrastructure in Southwest Alabama during his career.
Over what tenure is that? How long is that?
I don't remember how long it was. It was probably in the neighborhood of 30 years.
That's a bunch, but I wonder over that same period of time, what Southwest Alabama sent to Montgomery.
Yeah, more. Well, no doubt about it.
I mean, Southwest Alabama is a net giver to Montgomery.
We're doing some things to correct that.
Well, that's what I want to talk about. So going forward here, let's talk about, last time I was up here, we're talking about the gas tax, talk about infrastructure.
We got some extra money from the gas tax, primarily due to our economic developer who happened to see the language and made a suggestion on solving that problem and during the census every 5 years instead of every 10.
Now, explain that to me. We talked about that before, but why is it a benefit Baldwin County? Why does it benefit 95
That pot of revenue, for lack of a better word to describe it, was going to be allocated based on the population numbers every 10 years. We're growing at about 5,000 new population per year in Baldwin. So he realized that there was maybe another way of doing it and suggested a form of census that's honored by the federal government. They base their grants on this particular form. So we amended the bill to say that we would have the population numbers every 5 years instead of every 10, which was a big advantage to us growing so fast. It could mean millions of dollars to the county.
Well, I mean, it's Baldwin County and four others, I think, that are driving the growth for the entire state. All the rest of us counties are either neutral or losing population.
Yeah, that losing population is, we've got to have education, health, and infrastructure. Got to, that many counties needing it.
Well, as we wrap up in the news, the golden goose here, we'll go back into the legislature and talk to all those that may be needing some of those eggs. As always, we appreciate it. Remind folks about this Descendants Day thing going on today.
Okay, today at Archives from 2 to 5, Descendants Day, and these are the descendants of the individuals, the delegates to the 1819 Constitutional Convention, who created a constitution which created the state of Alabama. And one of the interesting things to me is there were only 22 counties at that time.
And let's just for a second here. You had kinfolk present back then.
Yeah. interested. His name was John Murphy. He was born in North Carolina, spent some time in South Carolina, was clerk of the Senate there, moved to Alabama and became a delegate to the 1819 convention. Later on became governor and U.S. congressman. Was also another interesting thing, a charter member of the Board of Trustees of the University of South Carolina. Nobody in my family's ever been there. It's just to school. So.
But that's your bloodline. And here you are in Montgomery today and have been for all this time. It's interesting to hear our history, and it's good that the Archives is doing that. We'll talk more about that coming up. Thank you for being here.
Yes, sir. Thank you
for coming down the floor. And we'll be coming right back. More Midday Mobile live from the fourth floor. Right underneath where the House is doing their thing here in Montgomery in the State House. Okay, coming right back. By the way, we'll take your text, 343-0106.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile live from Montgomery, and we are right here at the, I guess what we'd say, the back nine of the legislative session, halfway through the legislative session, and Jordan, I'm going to see if we're having a little issue here with the headset. Representative Chip Brown in studio, you got nothing from me? Well, we'll get you hooked up here. This is, we'll play engineer and host at exactly the same time. Is that better?
There we go.
All right, so thank you for walking downstairs.
Yeah, thanks, Sean. glad to see you here.
Yeah, it's good to be up here. So is that fair? We're on the back side here. This is the second half of the session.
This is the I think we're day 14 right now, so we're rounding the corner and heading for home.
Okay, so what does home look like?
Well,
other than South Mobile County, what does legislative home look like?
Well, you know, we're really actually ahead of schedule as far as we've gotten the general fund budget out of the House, and so you know, oftentimes that's what hangs up the House and the Senate is. You get to that last day. In the old days,
that always was the last thing. There was a lot of votes on tanning beds and all those things, and then eventually you got around to.
Well, you know the way the law is written too, it has to be passed by the 30th legislative day, midnight on the 30th legislative day. So, back in the old days when we actually met in the Capitol and not in the State House, there were often times when they would pull the plug on the clock in the State House. And go
creative
way past midnight to pass the budget. So fortunately, this year we've passed the general fund budget in the House. So we're ahead of schedule. I think we're clicking along at a good pace. We're doing well.
Okay, let's talk about some of the things that y'all will be dealing with in the House. The abortion bill
that comes up today, a few minutes actually.
So votes on that. This is, of course, we've talked about it before, a bill designed to challenge Roe versus Wade. We're not the only state doing this.
No, actually, it's a pattern that is going across the country to more or less challenge Roe v. Wade. There's several states, Oklahoma, Kansas, Mississippi, quite a few are trying to do that. You know, The makeup of the court has changed since Roe versus Wade went into effect in the 70s, early 70s. And so the thought is that, if we pass a restrictive abortion bill, then it will be challenged in the court. And, you know, perhaps we can overturn Roe versus Wade.
Is the bill as brought here in Alabama, is it the same as brought in Oklahoma? Is there one reason that one might be challenged faster than another? You know, I have not seen all the bills to know.
Well, you know, I think they're all somewhat similar. I mean, they all have the same restrictive philosophy. But this one is different, let's say. I mean, you know, they're all individual. Mm-hmm. What's one state?
There's something at the core is the same.
Let's put it this way. There's no group nationally saying, here's your bills.
Well, yeah, because I've talked about this cut and paste thing that I find interesting, and I'll keep looking into it. But this is not a cut and paste bill.
No, not at all.
All right, let's talk about some things that you've talked about with me a couple times. Bills that you are moving and moving with up here, and I'll let you tell me the numbers of them. But I think HB 282.
That's correct. HB 282, which is a constitutional amendment, and that is the no bond bill. And
What's that mean?
Well, what that says is that if you're charged with a Class A felony, then you if you're charged with a Class A felony, then a judge has the discretion to deny you bond. If the district attorney, what would have to happen is the district attorney would have to request a hearing before the judge and present evidence that you are a threat to society, you might be a flight risk. A good example would be if in a gang situation where mm-hmm. there's a shooting and someone's a gang member, they get back out on the street, then there's going to be, chances are pretty certain there's going to be retaliatory violence. And that's, by doing this currently, the way the law reads is the only time you can really deny bond is if you're charged with a capital offense, a capital mm-hmm. crime. And this broadens it to, say, a Class A felony, which would be, you know, your big crimes, your murders, your rapes, those sorts of things. Okay. You're violent of the violent, most violent in society.
They came up here, you have support from law enforcement, and district attorney and all that.
And you know, the Police Chiefs Association, the Sheriff's Association, the DAs, they're really the push behind this. I mean, you know, in Mobile, Sam Cochran, James Barber, mm-hmm. Chief Batiste, Ashley Rich, they're the ones that are really, you know, putting pressure on other members of the legislature to get this through. And, you know, we're working hard to get this because, you know, this is the number one issue. I mean, mm-hmm. a guy gets charged with a violent crime. Currently, the judges really don't have any discretion to keep that guy denying bond. He gets back on the street, and there's going to be more violence.
Lord knows, yeah. We got the story specifically at home. We're about to run out of time, but I want to, before, and I know you got to go back up there, but remind folks, too, the Oyster Bill.
Yeah, the Oyster Bill, which is HB 107, is up tomorrow in Ways and Means Education, and that gives a tax credit for recreational growing of oysters. But one thing I think is important, we have an amendment that goes on that you'll have to buy your spat or your seed from a Alabama-based grower, university, or agency.
All right, we'll talk more about that going forward. I know you got work to do back upstairs. Representative Brown, thank you.
Hey, thank you, Sean. I appreciate it.
All right, coming right back, hour number two of Midday Mobile. Y'all stay close.